to episode 8 of The Rift, August 16th, 2010. My name is Erythian.
And I'm Desicus.
So, Desi, how have you been for the last little while?
Very broke. Very broke.
It's the heat, isn't it? It made your electricity bill, like, skyrocket.
Actually, you just reminded me of that. So I've been broke for a couple weeks, actually. But no, it's that time of year again. College textbooks.
Oh, textbooks are ridiculously expensive.
I know. I think they make more money than tuition does.
I really think they do. It's like, I remember I had a professor once who I took a class from, and he required us to buy this little A5-sized book that had, I kid you not, like 120 pages. It cost me $85.
Yeah. One of my textbooks is actually this loose-leaf paper.
Oh my gosh.
So I have to buy a binder to put it in. So I'm like, not only are you making me buy an $80 book, I have to buy a binder for it.
Well, I've been getting ready for my parents, who are arriving next week for four weeks.
I get to watch doggies.
You do?
My buddies.
We did the computer.
Yes, I have a new computer. Yay. Well, I it's technically a new computer, basically.
Yeah, it's mostly a new computer.
And everybody keeps asking me what my specs are on it. And I go, Ari, what did we do?
Well, you know, we just made it so that it's going to, when Rift comes out, be able to run Rift.
Yes, I had to get a new graphics card because my significant other always goes, your computer's loud.
And now it's not. It's, like, perfectly quiet.
I know. I thought it was because my fan was dirty, and Ari pokes the graphics card and it stops making noise.
Yeah, so she has a new graphics card. Anyway, we digress. We took a little bit of a break after the beta podcast. I really want to thank everybody who listened and hope you enjoyed it.
It was actually new to my ears, just as everybody else listened to it, because it was short notice. We did it as fast as we could with Abby.
Yep, and sadly that doesn't always mean that we can time everything properly.
Fast as it is normally doesn't mean my schedule.
Yeah.
Now, this past week has seen a plethora of information released from the MMORPG.com article about the last race for either side and then confirmed the Pyromancer class to an in-depth look at the dwarves in a Massively article which covered a nice portion of the race's lore.
Yeah, it really did. It's really good. It's got nice screenshots. Really pretty. We like pretty.
We do like pretty.
Yeah.
We're girls. We're such girls.
I know, we're so girly.
We say that and then we talk about computers.
Yep. Hey, look, computers can be girly.
We save points.
Computers can be girly.
They can be. I've seen some pink ones.
Mine is shiny. Pink. Well, mine isn't pink.
Yours are going to have lights in it.
Yeah, mine's going to be red and black.
She's getting lights in her computer.
I am, because I want to, and I can. Anyway, 10-Ton Hammer gave us an amazing little sneak peek at the game. In this, they included the tidbit that, yes, there is a death penalty, but once every hour you get a sort of get-out-of-jail-free card, where you have a limited time to get away from the mobs that killed you, which I kind of like. That's kind of cool. Other deaths in that time appear to, other deaths in that hour appear to have a cost you can easily overcome, but they haven't really gone into detail on that yet.
They also describe the character customization system, which from what was said in the MMORPG article this week, has us wondering just how robust the system is. We're sure trying won't let us down with the end result, though.
Yep, and there are two parts to the sneak peek, and they're both well worth the read. Head over to 10-Ton Hammer and check them out. The IRC chat this week was great and consisted of Abby surprising the chat with three guests instead of just the one that we thought we were going to get, and they're all involved in dungeon instancing and design as well as the raiding instance aspect. Really interesting read. Make sure you pop over to Talara Central and check out the transcript. And as usual, Talarapedia has everything cataloged nicely.
I'm so guilty I haven't read it yet. I've been so busy. But
it's the textbook hunt.
The textbook hunt. Yeah.
Textbooks are evil.
So evil.
Yeah, but you need to read it.
I will.
That's your homework.
That's my favorite thing I want to know about. So.
So today we have Cindy with us, as usual. Hi, Cindy.
Hello. As always, it's so nice to be here with you.
It's great to have you. Today, we'd like to welcome Eric Vignola to the podcast. He is the lead character technical director for the Rift Plains of Talara project. Thank you so much for taking some time out to talk to us. Welcome, Eric.
Hi, Ari.
So we even managed to find you on the Internet Movie Database. We looked, trust me.
Oh, dear.
So, can you tell us a little bit about what you did before you worked for Trium?
Yes. Well, so I worked in film for a couple of years, and I did lots of, I did lots of jobs on several movies. I worked on Disney's Dinosaur, Final Fantasy, The Spirit Within. I worked on Shrek, Madagascar, Minority Report.
I love that movie.
Oh, you do?
Yes, I really love that movie.
If you remember the little robot spiders. Yeah. So that was my contribution.
Wow.
And yeah, and so so I come from a film background, but the very first thing that I did in America, I'm Canadian, by the way. If you can't tell my accent, it's French Canadian. So the first thing that I did in America was to work on a video game called Riven, the sequel to Myst.
I finished that.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Did you like the ending?
I loved the ending.
Okay, good, because that was part of the stuff that I did on that game. So me and another guy from Montreal, where I come from, we both came to Spokane, Washington, and we both were hired to do the CG ending for that game. And yes, so then he went back to Montreal, and I decided to stay, and that's when I started to work in film. And then after Minority Report, I joined Electronic Arts mm-hmm. for a couple of years to work on a few of their games, and then finally I landed here at Trion.
Well, I think that's great. We're very happy that you're here at Trion. Now, can you explain for the layperson such as me, who isn't very technical, exactly what it is you do in Rift?
Okay, so most people describe my job. I guess the term that is thrown out there usually is called. I'm called a rigger. And so to put it in layman's terms, what I do is I'm kind of like the in-between person between the animation team and the modeling team, mm-hmm. in the sense that I build I don't model the characters that that you see in game, but I'm in charge of doing all the magic that happens in the computer to deform the digital sculpture that makes the character, and come up with the animation system that the animators will eventually use to animate the character. So, in other words, if you're familiar with stop motion animation, for instance, or puppeteering. Here you go, puppeteering. Mm-hmm. I'm basically a puppeteer in the sense that I make the puppet, you know, I do all the little strings and I
do the little cross up the top.
Exactly. Or, you know, if you want to think about more advanced puppets, when you look at the Dark Crystal, you look at their faces. So I come up with all the, you know, I look at a character and I say if we use this type of rubber to do the upper lip, you know, we could achieve a better smile when the animator, which is inside the puppet, pulls those strings and lifts the eyelids or whatever. So I'm the craftsman that basically decides how to deform the material. In our case, it's
how to get it to do the movements. Is that correct?
Yeah, or you know, like if you look at a movie, so I'm gonna use a movie example. If you look at a movie like Shrek, for mm-hmm. instance, I would have done stuff such as when Shrek moves his head, we need to have his double chin kind of bulge out. So it sounds easy, but it's actually quite a challenge. And in a computer, you have to use a lot of math and. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a nice mixture between artistry and science, and I quite enjoy it. So that's what I do. And here at Trion, I use all those skills that I've acquired over the years to make our characters look very pretty, basically, and look good when they animate, and that's about it.
Well, every MMO gamer that I know likes good looking characters, so. You are appreciated.
So, well, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
So do you work with a team of people? What's your typical day like?
Okay, so yes, I do work with a team of people. I work with a lot of people, actually. generally about, I don't know, I'd say like 20 people, 20 to 25 people. Wow. But that includes... it includes multiple disciplines, right? So my main, if you want me to talk in terms of customers, my main customers are the animation team. So so I work with them, you know, so if they don't like a certain way that I've rigged one of their characters, you know, I have to interface with them to fix issues. I work with modelers as well, because I receive their models, and you know, the modelers will make these digital sculptures of characters that I will do work on to, you know, allow them to move and deform. And so I work with a team of modelers. I work with a team of animators. I have three fellow character TDs that work with me, and so the four of us are doing all the rigging on our game. And finally, I work also with the engineering team, because, you know, we have sometimes certain effects we wish to achieve when a character casts a spell, or, you know, if we want to do a character, you know, something explode, for instance, right? Yeah. And so if we don't have the tools on hand to do that in our game, then I have to go talk to the engineering team, and we have to come up with a middle ground to, you know, achieve the effect. And so I kind of handle the technical aspects of the work with the engineering team, and then with the artists, you know, we work to achieve the desired effect. So. Wow. So I'm not sure if I've answered your question, but
no, I think you work with a lot of people. You kind of work as a sort of a backbone for a lot of people, and the expression of the modeling team.
Yeah, I do a lot of work behind behind the curtains, basically, where you know, a lot of planning, a lot of troubleshooting, mainly troubleshooting, really. So,
well, it sounds fascinating. I think it does, because I mean, we get to play the end result where you've done all this work, and you know, I don't think many of us understand how much actually goes into it.
Oh, to you and to all the people out there, we have to, you know, there's a lot of people who are working really, really hard to make all of you guys out there really happy. So keep that in mind when you play our game.
Yay. Yes, okay. Indeed. So do you play yourself? Do you play games at all?
I do, yeah.
And what type of souls in, you know, I'm assuming you've played the game, you know, to test it for yourself. What sort of type of souls do you prefer to play, like tanks or healers or?
Well, okay, so my style is definitely the rogue direction. Yeah, I guess it's because I'm lazy, and I really like to pick my victim and just soften him up from a distance, and when he's finally within range, you know, he's pretty he's almost dead, basically, and I just, you know, give him the finishing blow. That's my kind of gameplay. I'm very casual. I like to go places, and I don't want to be stressed. I want to pick out my victims and just, you know, dispatch them.
And in the game, I have to ask, what type of rift is your favorite?
Well, okay, so my favorite rift right now, I can't talk about it, unfortunately. However, I will talk about my second favorite.
Okay.
My second favorite will be the life rift. But I, you know, honestly, it's purely from a technical aspect again. When I look at how the life rift was animated using the rig that I provided to the animators, I'm just really happy. I can see, you know, all the little details move, and I look at it and I'm like, wow, you know what, this is really cool. You know, you see these little things bulge here and there, and it's really, really kind of neat, you know. So I really enjoy that one. It's kind of my favorite so far. Second favorite, sorry.
Excellent. Okay, so now we're going to get down to the nitty-gritty. So, was it easier to animate in film, or is it easy to do your rigging that you do? Is it easy to do in games?
Both mediums, they basically have their own challenges. Yeah. I wouldn't say that one of them is easier or harder. They're completely different. In film, the end result requires to be a story. You know, it's a story that you're trying to tell with rendered images. Usually people like me, we're just trying to create the prettiest pictures possible.
Yeah.
Right. And so a lot of work goes into details, and we have a lot of resources, but with, you know, like we have like thousands of computers that can calculate for hours to render a picture. And yeah, right. And so but with a lot of resources comes a lot of technical challenges, and you want to use very advanced techniques to, you know, to do your work. So that's for film. For film, you know, lots of resources, and the end result needs to be a nice, pretty picture that tells a story and emotion. With games, it's different because it has to be interactive, and it's real time, and we don't have thousands of machines that can sit in a room and compute, you know, for hours until a single picture comes out, right?
Yeah.
Everything has to happen in that tiny little box, you know, your computer, your Xbox, your PlayStation, and that comes with its own sets of challenges. One of them is, well, you know, you have to do a lot with very little. Your little computer needs to calculate 60 images per second, mm-hmm. and you don't have hours. You don't have 1,000 hours for each, right? It has to be in real time. So when you look at a character move in a video game and you see all the stuff that's happening, you should really take the time to appreciate all the work that goes into it, because really what's happening on your screen is there's a lot that's going on. There's a lot of artistry that's going on in order to do a lot with very little means. Mm-hmm. So I'd say that's basically the difference between the two. Now, I'm in games right now because I enjoy the challenge, and there's a lot of things left to do in games because of the technology is changing very, very rapidly. Where film is, you know, it's an established medium that's been around for a long time, mm-hmm. and sorry, I don't want to bore you with the details.
No, it's not.
So that's basically it. They both offer their own challenges, and I guess I'll leave it at that.
Now, is there any sort of motion capture being used in the animation of Rift at all?
No, none at all. All of our animation is hand keyed by a team of I counted the other day. I think we have 8 or 9 animators.
Wow.
And eventually on your show, I'm sure you'll have your our lead animator come on your show eventually, and he can talk more about that. But all I'll say is that we made the decision not to have any motion capture in our game at a very early stage. Simply because we wanted our creatures to convey basically not necessarily realistic, you know, mm-hmm. movements, right? There are certain things that are really hard to do in motion capture, and one of them is, you know, if you wanna have a vampire that has bat wings, and when he dies, you want him to kind of like do this Tex Avery, you know, pose, and then fall on the ground. It's kind of hard to do that with motion capture. It never really works. So that's why we decided to just, you know, let's just keyframe everything by hand, and we're super happy with the results. I don't think that it's something that we're regretting today.
Yeah, well, everything that I've seen, you know, that was shown from E3 and other videos, I would have to agree. So,
well, it offers us a lot of liberty too. You know, we don't have to depend on a schedule. You know, we don't have to schedule a motion capture studio and have like a set of motions done by them, and then wait for the result. It's much more efficient to have the animators here mm-hmm. do the art. You know, because motion is an art. And sometimes motion capture doesn't quite capture that, in my opinion, anyway.
So what do you believe is more difficult to set up, like, rigging for? Something that has a basis in reality, like the character models and making them feel realistic, or something fantasy like the tentacles of a Death Rift?
That's a good question. Fantasy is definitely more fun. Because the people who will see the people who will see our creatures, they don't have any frame of reference, right? Mm-hmm. So if you try to go with something that's very realistic, your brain doesn't have anything to compare against. So if I try to make a super realistic bunny or something, well, you know, you've seen a bunny, so you can tell that this is a video game bunny versus a real bunny. Now if I make a crazy dinosaur with two tails and two heads, well, you've never seen that in your lifetime, and so that's, you know, then you just like can imagine,
kind of accept it more too.
Kinda, yeah, exactly. So, but from a technical point of view, it's all, I personally think that it's more fun to do fantasy things because, well, they offer more. There's more things we can do to make it interesting, you know, like squash and stretch, the classic animation, you know, techniques to kind of exaggerate certain things that in real life might not be, you know, quite appropriate. So that kind of stuff. So from a rigging perspective, I think it's more interesting. There's more creative things that that can be done perhaps with fantasy creatures. Mm-hmm. However, you know, for realistic creatures, there are challenges there too. But it's basically you're going to spend a lot more time trying to replicate reality, and those are challenges that are really hard to do because, once again, you know, people have a frame of reference.
Yeah.
We've all seen what Arnold Schwarzenegger looks like when he bench presses. So in order to make that work with 3D graphics, it's a little harder because, you know, the public has a frame of reference.
So how did you decide, because you said, you know, you do the rigging and the life rift and everything, how did you decide how that was going to open up and look like that, like how it was going to move like that?
Well, so, you know, all that stuff kind of happens very organically. We try to plan ahead. We try to, the way it usually works is you'll have a concept artist, you know, come up with, like drawings of the creature, mm-hmm. or rift to kind of, you know, give us some inspiration. And then, I'll usually talk with, if it's a rift, it's going to be with the environment lead. If it's a character, I'll be talking usually with the character lead about basically what do we want this character to do. So if it's a giant monster with tiny legs and a big mouth, well, do we want, you know, his mouth to do something special when it opens? Do we want its lips to kind of curl up in some kind of funny way? Or, I mean, who knows, right?
Yeah.
And do we want him to pulse or whatever? So we'll have like we'll try to plan ahead, and then by the time the models are done, I'll just, you know, work my magic, and then a few days later I'll give it to an animator and show him how the bells and whistles work, and mm-hmm. he'll do the animation. Sometimes the animators come back and make a suggestion, maybe something we did that does not work well enough, and they would like to do something that we did not think ahead of time. And so, you know, it's a little organic. It goes back and forth. And then sometimes, like, you know, will happen on any game, when you approach the ship date, things start to happen really fast, and you don't have a lot of time to plan these things. So you kind of have to rely on the experience and imagination of the people who are involved, right? So very often what will happen is if there's a request for a creature that, you know, was not planned for any reason, sometimes what will happen is that the modelers will make a creature, and then it'll fall in my plate, and I'll basically inspect the model and come up on the fly with the best things to do with it. So the model in a way will kind of dictate the deformations. Mm-hmm. And so that approach, it's not our favorite one, but it happens often when things start to happening fast and you have to start iterating, you know, on very short notice.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, we kind of like to plan ahead. So the creative leads usually come together and come up with an agreement over how they want these things to work. And then the art director will give us his okay, and then we'll just make it happen.
Well, the life and death rifts that we've all seen look great. So we like
that.
Oh,
wonderful.
Now, I have to ask, were you responsible for the female rogue class wielding one of her weapons backwards?
Well, that's an animation question that really the animation director would be able to reply. So honestly, no. So I did not make that decision. That's definitely it's an animation question, and I have a sneaking suspicion that you'll interview whoever's responsible for that in the coming weeks.
Oh, that would be great. I really like that little flicky sword thing. So we just had an MMORPG article, and it revealed one of the new races, the dwarves. Yeah. Now, are there any unique challenges you face when working with a small, squatty character model over a large, bulky one and having to rig them? Are there, like, differences?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, there's obvious proportion differences, and what are the differences? I mean, there's so many. Where to begin? well, to begin with, you know, for my part, right? I handle the rigging part. If you ask that question to an animator, he or she will have tons of things that he or she will be able to tell you. Simply because, you know, the two characters, because they're so different, they move differently. Mm-hmm. From a rigging point of view, you know, I deal with deformations a lot more, and I can tell you that it's definitely easier to set up tall and thin characters than it is to set up squatty, short characters. Simply because, well, there's a lot more mass to move around. And mm-hmm. And if our characters were just like standing straight and walking forward, you know, I'd say there's no problem. I can do everything. But the problem, the thing is that in our studio, we try to give the animators as much freedom as possible. And the rigging philosophy that I've tried to set up here at Tryon is basically the rigs that we create need to be able to handle as many different poses as possible. Mm-hmm. We're trying to really make sure that the animators are not limited with what they can create. And so because of that, well, we've had to do a lot of work, especially like on our dwarves, that we've had to mm-hmm. do so much work to make sure that they look good, because, you know, they're much shorter. So when they do a forward tumble, or when they bend forward, what do you do with that belly? so it sounds silly, but we've had to think about that.
Yeah.
And their skirts behave differently, and there's all sorts of things that may not be apparent at first glance, but we've had to do a lot of research to make it look good.
So, in that vein, if, like, there's usually emotes in games, which we don't know if there are yet, but if they have to, like, dance or something, like, if they're doing something different, like, each race going to have different ones, and therefore you have to, like, take all of that into consideration when you're building a rig as well?
So, to begin with, all of our creatures have unique animation sets, so we don't clone animations for each character. So, for instance, mm-hmm. you know, so when a Bami male has a two-handed sword in his hand, mm-hmm. he's gonna hold it in a way that is very specific to his race, as opposed to an elf,
yeah.
or you know, so they'll you know, so because of that, we've decided to author unique animation sets for all of our creatures and players. So. So therefore, when you ask me, you know, so are they going to have unique dances and stuff? So absolutely. So we have, once again, our animation lead will probably talk to you about that in the near future. But I'll just say that each character race in our game has an animator that is assigned to it, and he or she is in charge of basically the whole, you know, the character's personality, how they behave, how they stand up when they're idling.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, and it's, and that's really a lot of fun when I see the end result. You know, it's kind of nice because I've been here for so long, I can kind of tell, like, oh, you know, so-and-so probably animated this character, because I can recognize that, you know, they like to put a little comedy in, you know, in how their characters die or how they, you know, do certain things. So, so that's kind of interesting. And so, sorry if I segued here, but to answer your question, each one of our characters definitely have unique animation sets, and we, you know, they have, each one of them have different proportions, and I think it's a great benefit to our game, because it makes every time you're going to discover a new creature, it's going to be fun to basically, you know, see how it behaves, mm-hmm. and you know, and it just makes it so much more interesting.
Recently, there have been games that push the limits of what they show. An example is like in some of the games, they've been extremely violent, you know, combat animations, and a lot of Asian games focus on like sexy character design and stuff like that. With right. Rift, are they going for like an over-the-top violence or sexiness, or more of a traditional level?
Well, so, you know, so this is, again, a question that I think our animation lead will be able to talk, you know, he'll be able to give you the whole rundown on the philosophy behind, you know, how we decided to instill life in our characters. But, you know, I mean, I can tell you that, you know, we never cross into straight gore. You know, we have a word fill, I'm sorry, we have a, I'm losing my voice here. We have a world that is completely filled, you know, with events that require, you know, violence to resolve, right? So, but, you know, but it's never for free. It's never gratuitous. You know, it's kind of, you know, you go.
It's got a reason, rhyme and reason to it.
It's got a reason, exactly. And so yeah, so we have a wide range of tones in our game, so that the players can feel a contrast between, mm-hmm. you know, something that feels more comical versus something that is supposed to feel more serious or urgent, right?
Yeah.
So, and MMO requires, you know, a very broad selection of content to appeal to you know, to very diverse public, right?
Yep.
So that's it. So I mean, we have a lot of stuff in our game, but it's never, you know, we try to be sensitive, and we try to
trying to be family friendly and yet still appeal to a wider audience.
Yeah, kind of. It's, you know, when something will visually hurt, you know, it'll hurt, but it'll be kind of funny or fun to watch at the same time. So,
okay.
But it's never gratuitous, and you know, it's basically
always has a reason.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay. So, will any of the characters twist or flip while jumping, or do little cute things that, you know? Does the rigging allow for that? Like, does the deformity of the movement, does it allow for something like that in this game?
Oh, of course, yes. I mean, our characters can squash and stretch if they want to. They can do a lot of different things, and you know, I won't go into the animation details again, but we do have a couple of characters that do, you know, certain, you know, interesting things that are unique to their race. Yeah, exactly. You know, I can't really tell you what it is, but
we'll find out. You
know, you'll find out. Yeah.
Now, what was the most difficult thing in Rift to rig for animation? If it's something you can let us know about.
Oh, the most difficult thing in Rift. My gosh. Well, the rifts themselves are challenges of their own. Resolving how we're doing cloth in our game, you know, was kind of interesting because of the armor part system. The animation is done in such a way so that any armor that you equip needs to work, right? So if you have something that has a long flowy robe, mm-hmm. Well, you don't want it to penetrate through the legs, or, you know, you don't want your legs to suddenly reveal, you know, to pass through the robes, right? So so resolving how we're doing that has definitely been you know, a lot of work, yeah, definitely that. And also, you know, like how we share animation. So I said earlier that we, you know, all the animation is uniquely authored.
Mm-hmm.
We do have an exception is for the NPCs, the humanoid NPCs. Sometimes what we'll do is we'll try to share some animations with the player sets, with the NPC sets, just because, you know, if you have a nice, decent human male walk, you don't need a different one for...
NPCs.
For an NPC that looks exactly the same, right? Doesn't really make sense. So there was some challenges there to to come up with a nice scheme that kind of looks nice and without having to, you know, something that won't basically pop into your face that, you know, when you see a village with full of NPCs, you won't be like, hey, that's the same walk as my player. So there was definitely some challenges there.
Okay. Now I have a really important question.
Yeah.
Can you tell us how far you've gotten in perfecting Simon's death throw animation?
That's pretty funny.
Because he's going to get killed a lot.
Oh, well, so, you know, what's really funny about this is, I'll just say this. So we have a lot of tools internally to do all sorts of things, right? We can track where people are, we can see population density, so we can see, you know, but we can track a lot of information and that help us, you know, design our levels and our maps. And one day, a couple of you know, weeks ago, or maybe it was a month or two ago, we had a discussion internally about, you know, how many people, you know, died in certain zones, and so somebody generated this map of this zone, and you saw like little colored blotches, you know, that showed basically, you know, where who died and why and all that, and we just couldn't help noticing that there's this one zone where Simon died over and over and over, and it was, I forget what color was assigned to his character, but it was so thick in that area that we, you know, it was kind of fun. We had to poke.
Oh man, the poor guy.
Yes. No, we love Simon actually, so that's what we poke fun at him. You kid because you love. That's what we say back home.
Now, this question I have to ask Cindy because I really need to know, because Gamescom is just around the corner, and how excited are you for Gamescom?
Oh, very. We've been just having a lot of fun putting everything together. I will be announcing by today where people can go for our party. We're having a big community event, and you just have to come by our booth and get tickets to be able to get to it. Lots of food and drink and hanging out with the devs and the community people, and prizes, of course, to be given away. So anybody that's in the area and attending the show, please come by and get your ticket. We can't wait to see you.
Oh, well, that sounds like a blast.
I am really looking forward to it. And don't forget, we'll be doing the same thing at PAX. So we'll have people on this side of the pond able to come and visit with us a little bit.
Oh, cool. I'll just go make sure I move to Seattle then.
Sounds good to me.
So thank you so much for giving us so much of your time today, Eric. It has been great to have you with us. And it definitely, for me, it's extremely interesting to hear about this aspect of what goes on and what goes into, you know, the behind the scenes efforts of making the games that I love to play playable.
Well, Ari, it was a true pleasure, and I had a lot of fun talking to you. You're very bubbly, and it was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So thank you again, Cindy, for coming and spending time with us, and we really appreciate everything that you do for us in the community.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having us again, Ari. We really appreciate all the work you put into these podcasts. And I just want to say, you know, I'll be gone all next week at Gamescom, so I'll keep in touch as best as I can with the community. But remember, I'm not here day to day like I usually am. So everybody hold down the fort and welcome the newcomers and help keep the community going while I'm out of the country for a little while.
Oh, we definitely will. And you have a good time.
I will definitely do that. Thanks.
We really appreciate Eric taking the time to come out and explain the rigging process to us. I can't believe the amount of work that goes on behind the scenes. It makes me appreciate the characters that I play in games all the more.
It really does. I just, you know, like when I stab something, I now know a lot more goes into that move than I originally thought would.
It makes you think about our favorite moves from the Night Elves and WoW doing the little flippies.
And how many flips I could get in a row.
Yes.
Or in Ion.
The flippy backspang move.
Oh, yeah, my flippy smack bang move. That was just one of the chanter moves. Was just amazing.
That's what
I
she
loved
called it. And she it called was. My assassin move the whirly poo.
Yeah, she did the whirly poo and I had the flippy smack bang.
But, like, those are such detailed movements that
I know.
Just make sure.
So now I look at it and go, wow. Instead of just, this is fun.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, speaking of characters in game, since 10-Ton Hammer sort of gave away a few more classes, including the Sentinel, who's a healer, Assassin, who's a rogue, Saboteur, and a Pyromancer, are you thinking any differently about what class you're going to play?
Yeah, I'm screwed. Why? I have no idea.
You have no idea?
Well, I was
so getting... So you're going to be my tank this time.
I know. Well, I'll be... I don't know. We'll see. But, okay, I'm going to say I started playing Aeon again because I felt like I was getting really rusty playing it without playing any games. And I'm playing what would be the melee healer?
Chanta.
Yeah. So I'm playing her favorite class from Aeon.
Yeah.
And I'm loving it.
So now you want to be a healer?
Maybe.
Okay.
We'll see.
Well, I'm still hoping there'll be some sort of utility or crowd control class in the game. I'm crossing my fingers. There are a lot of them they haven't released yet, so I'm really hoping for a support class.
That'd be so cool. From everything we've heard this week, and with Gamescom looming on the horizon, Rift is getting ready for an information explosion.
I'm so excited about all the information we're going to be hearing over the next few weeks. If this week is anything to judge by, the coming weeks are going to be absolutely amazing.
Now, a few other things that we should mention, and this is exciting. We'll be starting a little competition in the near future, so keep an ear out for that. Next week's podcast, if all goes well, will involve us talking to Abby while she's at Gamescom.
And my parents are going to be coming as of next Thursday, and they're staying for 4 weeks with me. So I'm going to be a little scarcer than I usually am. Probably a lot scarcer than I usually am. We're going on a couple of trips and stuff, and I'm having Desi babysit my dogs. So
I'll be chilling on a computer. I don't know about you.
Now, also, Dragon from Rift Junkies has been dabbling in a Rift comic, which is so actually funny. Really funny and well worth a look at. So we'll have a link to that one up as well.
We've added an episode list page for those people who might want to download previous episodes and don't use iTunes.
Yes, so we're trying to be helpful. Also, for those people interested in the processes we go through in order to get our podcast ready for our listeners, please go to our site, riffpodcast.com, and take a look at the podcast processes page where we explain how we do them.
Yep. She was having a lot of fun with that, actually.
Yeah, it was fun to write down.
Sadly, it's that time again. Don't forget to go to the site, riftpodcast.com. We'll have all the relevant links up in our show notes post. We hope you enjoyed the podcast.
Yep. And don't forget, you can contact us by email, riftpodcast@gmail.com, through the comments on the site or via the contact form. You can also follow Rift Podcast on Twitter. This is Arithian.
And this is Deskus.
And we hope you listen to us next week.